Over the years, the Marshall Artist Series has brought some incredible performers, artists, to perform here in Huntington. People like B.B. King, Willie Nelson, Harry Belafonte, Bill Monroe, Odetta. We wanted to celebrate the right way by bringing somebody who was a part of the fabric of American music, and I think we've done that. Please welcome back to the Mountain Stage, Arlo Guthrie.
Thank you. It is very nice to be back here. This is I don't know how many times I've done this, but it's always been fun. And I'm here tonight with family and friends. This is my son Abe here, who's playing keyboard with me, and my grandson Krishna on guitar tonight. My old buddy Terry Oliveri on the drums back there. And we've been on the road for the better part of a year, and we're just coming up to the end of a tour, so we are happy to be here. In July 2012, we're going to be celebrating the 100th birthday of my father, Woody Guthrie, and we're getting ready for that. I was looking for some thoughts of his that might seem current today, and there's quite a few of them. He said one time, he said, if a farmer robs a bank, within minutes, there's a lot of people looking for that guy. You got the chief of police and the deputies and the marshals and the FBI and the state police. And I mean, there could be hundreds of people looking for one guy in just a couple of minutes. But if a bank robs a farmer, it's a different world out there, ain't it? And he wrote this song. If you gather round me, children, this story I will tell about pretty boy Floyd the Outlaw. Oklahoma knew him well. It was in the town of Shawnee on a Saturday afternoon. His wife beside him in his wagon as into town they rode. Their deputy sheriff approached them in a manner rather rude, using vulgar words of language, and his wife she overheard. Pretty boy grabbed a log chain, and the deputy grabbed a gun, and in the fight that followed, he laid that deputy down. He took to the trees and the timbers, and he lived a life of shame. Every crime in Oklahoma was added to his name. He took to the trees and the timbers of the Canadian River shore, but the outlaw found a welcome at many a farmer's door. There's many a star and farmer, you know the same old story told, how the outlaw paid their mortgage and saved their little homes. And others tell you of a stranger who had come to beg a meal, and underneath his napkin left $1,000 bill. It was in Oklahoma City, it was on a Christmas day. There come a whole carload of groceries with a letter that did say, you say that I'm an outlaw, yes, you say that I'm a thief. Well, here's a Christmas dinner for the families on relief. You know, it's through this world I've rambled, I've seen lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a six gun, and some with a fountain pen. But it's through your life you ramble, and it's through your life you roam. You won't ever see an outlaw drive a family from their home. Of course, the first songs that my father ever heard was long before there was radio. They was just getting light bulbs out there in that part of Oklahoma. So they didn't have the radios or the record players, and people sat around like they'd been doing for countless generations, just singing the old songs, you know. And the first songs my father ever heard was the ones that his mother, my grandmother, would sing him when he was just a little kid. And later on in life, he had some thoughts about that, and he wrote it down. It was a sort of a song, but if he had a tune to it, it went with him. He couldn't write music, so it left with him. And it just sat there, words on a piece of paper. Took about 2 years ago when my old friend Janice Ian got a hold of the lyrics and put a little tune to it and brought a song to life. And I just thought it was so pretty, I thought I'd sing it for you tonight. Go something like this. If I could only hear my mother sing again, if I could hear you now as easily as then, all the friends and family would sing along with me, set your spirit free. In my heart, I hear you sing again. Every note is natural as then. And when I sing those songs to family and friends, in my heart, I hear you sing again. I know the troubled times have turned your hair to gray, and all the tears and sorrows followed to your grave. But deep within the heart of hunger, there were always melodies passed from you to me. In my heart, I hear you sing again. Every note is natural as then. And when I sing those songs to family and friends, in my heart I hear you sing again. And it's a long, long road I've come since my mother's voice was heard. But the child I can't outrun still hangs on every word. In my heart, I hear you sing again. Every note is natural as then. And when I sing those songs to family and friends, in my heart, I hear you sing again. In my heart, I hear your voice again. My father recorded about 200 songs, and about half of them were just the old songs, you know, the old cowboy songs, whatever that he grew up hearing. And so when I grew up, a folk singer was somebody who knew a lot of the old songs and sang them, and maybe once in a while wrote a new song or something like that. Although these days, when you hear the word folk singer, you generally think of somebody singing songs in the key of me. And I'm as guilty as that as the next guy, so I don't have a problem with it. But I do like the old songs, too. And so here's one that I just love from New Orleans. It was down in old Joe's barroom at the corner by the square. The drinks were served as usual, and the usual crowd was there. Now on my left stood Big Joe McKennedy. His eyes were bloodshot red, and as he looked at the gang around him, these were the very words he said. I went down to the St. James Infirmary. I saw my baby there, stretched out on a long white table, so young, so cold, so fair. 17 coal black horses hitched to a rubber-tired hack. 7 girls going to the graveyard, only 6 of them are coming back. Well, let her go, let her go, God bless her, wherever she may be. She may search this wide world over and never find another man like me. Stetson hat. Place a $20 gold piece on my watch chain to let the Lord know I died standing pat. I want 6 crap shooters for my pallbearers and a chorus girl to sing me a song. Place a jazz band on my hearse wagon just to raise hell as we roll along. But now that you've heard my story, I'll take another shot of booze. And if anyone here should ask you, I've got the gambler's blues. I love the song from New Orleans, you know, just good old stuff. As a matter of fact, I spent a lot of time, you know, down there just because that's where the music of this country is really sort of born in some ways, you know. With people with different backgrounds and different everything got together, started playing, and it's never been the same since. And I love that, you know. Matter of fact, one of my first heroes, a guy named Huey Ledbetter, came from Louisiana. Everybody called him Lead Belly, you know. Actually, he's the first memory I have in my whole life. I was 2 years old, and I know I was 2 because by the time I was 3, he was already gone. He was born 1880-something in Louisiana and, you know, grew up playing everything, guitars. He was the king of the 12-string guitar. But he played the squeeze box and the piano and air, I mean, whatever he can get his hands on. But he got in a fight one time, and somebody died, and he was in the penitentiary down there for a long time. He was going to be there for a long time, but they let him out. They gave him a full pardon because he wrote great songs. What a freaking concept. Imagine how many songs are locked up around the world right now, you know. But he's the first memory I've got. I'm 2 years old, standing there, come up to his knee or something like that. And I started thinking about that recently. Why would standing next to somebody for probably a couple of seconds in your life stay with you the entire time? There's no answer to it. I was just thinking about it. But I grew up singing the songs. I played the 12-string because of him. I worked with guys like Pete Seeger for 30, 40 years, and every show we ever did together, there was always a Lead Belly song in there, you know? And so I love the man. A couple of years back, we was in Louisiana. We had some days off. We were on the road, and not enough time to go anywhere. So we just sat there, and I looked at the band. I said, "We're going on a mission from God." And they went, "Oh, man, not one of those." I said, "Yeah, we're going to find Lead Belly's grave." I knew he was buried somewhere in Louisiana, you know. And there's no point of interest on the GPS that says Lead Belly's grave. You got to drive around asking people. So we're driving around, eventually outside of Shreveport, we come up to a little church up on a hill. We pull the bus around the back. We're walking through this graveyard, and we're looking around. And sure enough, we come to this big tombstone, bigger than all the rest of them. And it said, "Hughie Leadbetter, Leadbelly, king of the 12-string guitar, a Louisiana legend." We had found Leadbelly's grave. And I was so freaking excited. Had a big wrought iron gate all around him, you know. Somebody said, "They still got him locked up." So we broke that open. We got out the 12 string, and I sat on his grave like I remember sitting in his lap when I was a kid, you know, and just sang some of the old songs. This is one of my favorites. I'm Alabama bound. And if the train don't stop and turn around, I'm Alabama bound. Oh, don't you leave me here. Oh, don't you leave me here. And if you must go anyhow, leave a dime for beer. I'm Alabama bound. I'm Alabama bound. And if your train don't stop and turn around, I'm Alabama bound. Yellow green is gone. Yellow green. She's running through the country with a long clothes on. Alabama bound. I'm Alabama bound. I'm Alabama bound. And if your train don't stop and turn around, I'm Alabama bound. You know the preacher preached, he passed a hat around. He said, "Come on, people, shoot your money to me. I'm Alabama bound. I'm Alabama bound. I'm Alabama bound." And if you train, I'm Alabama bound. I'm Alabama bound. And if the train don't stop and turn around, I'm Alabama bound. I remember actually the first song I wrote, one of the first songs I ever wrote on a 12 string. Whoops, let me see if I can find the right thing for this thing. Yeah, there we go. Man, I remember it was back 1965. I was going out to the West Coast for the first time. And I was so excited. I was going to open a show for Sonny Terry and Brian McGee. I was about 18 years old, and man, I'd never been to the West Coast, so I was looking forward to it. My mom was nervous. I was going out on my own, you know, and she said, "Arlo, if you're going out there all by yourself, you've got to stay with family or friends." And I said, "Mom, we don't have family or friends out there." She said, "Well, then the next best thing." The next best thing was a guy named Ramblin' Jack Elliott. And Ramblin' Jack had traveled around. My father took good care of him on the road for a couple of years. And at 18 years old, I knew Ramblin' Jack better than my mom. I was freaking eager to stay with Ramblin' Jack. I didn't let her know that. I said, "Well, if I have to." So I get out to the West Coast, and Ramblin' Jack's there, and he was in those days and remains to this very day a rodeo fanatic. So I got to his house, and we put down my stuff. When we walked down the road, he was living in Malibu, just north of Los Angeles, and we walked to this rodeo arena. The Trancas Riders and Ropers Association was having some event going on, barrel riding, that kind of stuff. And there was a parade going by on horseback, you know, and leading that parade was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen in my life. Stop you cold, drop dead, drooling out of both sides of your face, gorgeous, you know. I was just looking. She didn't even look at me. So I was feeling depressed. And I didn't realize it at the time, neither did she, that we'd meet again in a few years, get married, have kids, still married, same kids, everything. But at that time, we didn't know that. So Jack saw the look in my face. He looked at me. He said, "Arlo, take this." I said, "What is it?" He said, "Don't worry, it'll wear off." I remember having some strange dreams that night. I got up the next morning, wrote this song, put it on the first record that came out a couple of years after that. Still one of my favorite songs from that time. It goes something like this. Sail with me into the unknown void that has no end. Swept along the open road that don't seem to begin. Come with me and love me, babe. I may be back again. Meantime, I'll keep sailing down this highway in the wind. Evenings just begin the days, it follows with the night. To love you and to be with you, to say that it's all right. Love me while you have me, babe. I may be back again. Meantime, I'll keep sailing down this highway in the wind. Fortune teller tells me I have somewhere to go. I look and try to understand. I wonder
how she knows. So I must be going now. I'm losing time, my friend. Looking for a rainbow down this highway in the wind. So I must be going now. I'm losing time, my friend. Looking for a rainbow down this highway in the wind.
I mentioned my old buddy Pete Seeger just moments ago, and I remember started working with him in the late 60s, and we'd played together for 35, 40 years, and did shows all over the world together, and mostly these sort of outdoor shed type things in the summertime, that kind of thing. And he come to me about 10 years back, he said, "Arlo, I can't be doing those big shows anymore. I can't play like I used to play. I can't sing like I used to sing." And I just looked at him. I said, "Pete, look at our audience. They can't hear like they used to hear." He said, "Well," he said, "maybe you're right." So every once in a while over the past 10 years, been calling me up and asked me to help him out with something, and I'm always happy to go. And it was last year, he was doing something in New York City, a fundraiser for the Clearwater Sloop that he got going up and down the Hudson to start cleaning up the rivers of the country and the world as a sort of prototype way of doing it. And so I went, and it was halfway through the show, and I started getting the feeling something was going on I wasn't aware of. We got to the end of the show, and before anybody left, or before we actually left the stage, he looked out and said, "Let's go to Wall Street." Well, we were 70 blocks from Wall Street. And I had a cold beer waiting for me backstage. And I thought, man. And I looked at Pete. He's like 94. He said, "I bought 2 new canes." "Well, what are you going to say?" I said, "Okay, let's go." So we start walking. He says, "It's not going to be too bad. The Occupy kids from Wall Street are going to come up and meet us halfway up. And we're going to be singing some songs together, a little spontaneous rally kind of thing." And I said, "Okay." But we get there, I think most of these kids are looking at us going, "Who the hell are these guys?" No clue, you know. But it was fun. Sort of felt like it did 40 years ago when everybody's out there, you know, saying what was on their mind. I love that feeling again. And there are people in this country who believe that government is best when it serves those with the most. And I'm just not one of them. That's true. I think government is best when it serves everybody about the same, even if it's bad. So we did that, and it got some press. And a few days later, I got a call from David Crosby, called me up, my old buddy, you know. He says, "Me and Graham saw you and Pete on TV. We want to go." And I said, "All right, man." So it's nice to see some of my peers get out there and get that feeling back. And so it was after that, Crosby called me back. He said, "We're putting together a little CD, a fundraiser for the Occupy guys all over the world, and especially here in the U.S., and it's going to be a little fundraiser for them. We want you to contribute a song." And I'm thinking, man, what do I got? So I reached back for one of my old ones, changed a couple of words around, got together with all my family. We sing together at times and came up with this. I was watching the news tonight, and all over the world, people were singing and carrying signs. All over the world, everybody walking hand in hand through cities that I've been, and though I'm
not there tonight. You know I'll be back again. I'll be back again. I'll be back again. I'm on a plane tonight for Germany, and all over the world there are lots of people just like you and me. All over the world who know the bonds must never fall again. All over the world, and we must all learn how to live as friends. All over the world, all over the world, all over the world. Making the news tonight all over the world, because we know that what we do is right. All over the world, and I won't be satisfied. All over the world, until the whole world's occupied. All over the world, all over the world, all over the world.
If you ever been to a place where something happened, something important, there's a feeling to it. You know what I mean? I mean, people go there because they can feel something. Could be a battlefield or natural disaster. Could be something good, like a big party or something. But whatever it is, there's something that history leaves in places like that. And the more people that go and see it, there's a little piece of them that stays too. And so over time, the place gets to be, I don't know what the word is, just more of it. You know what I mean? The same thing happens with songs. You got these old songs, sometimes they don't mean a whole hell of a lot in and of themselves, but because of the spirit of the people that have been singing them for so long, they take on something bigger than life, bigger than what was originally intended. And this song sort of feels like that to me. As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me an endless skyway. I saw below me a golden valley. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. I've roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps through the sparkling sands of your diamond deserts. And all around me, a voice was sounding. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
I was thinking about this song the other day. I didn't mean to stop, but sometimes you get in the middle of something and something gets in your mind, and what's left of it. I mean, because there's so much going on in the world right now. Sometimes you think, what has singing these old songs got to do with anything? I mean, you got the flood, famine, earthquake, disease, disaster, tsunamis, hurricanes. You got the tornadoes. You got the volcanoes, mudslides, whiteout, storm, whatever, you know. Anywhere in the world, any one of them things could be just happening. And that's just the regular natural stuff that you would expect in a world like ours. And that's not even to mention the stuff people are doing to each other. That's getting crazy. Not just around the world, here in this country too, people just getting nuts. People say, well, it's just that communication's better. We're hearing about it. BS. People are getting crazier, I know. I'm one of them. So you wonder if anybody can do anything about it. If any one person could make some kind of a difference. You know what I mean? And so you vote for this guy or that gal, whatever. You usually have the feeling after you voted the same way you had it before you did. It just takes time. But you wonder, can anybody make a difference? And it reminded me of that old story of Joseph. Now, don't get me wrong. I was doing this in Utah one night. They had a whole nother Joseph going on for the longest time. I'm talking about the original Joseph. The one with the coat, you know, and the brothers. They got that out here, right? Yeah. So they got the brothers, and the brothers didn't like their brother Joseph very much. You know the story. And not just because he had the coat, but they was pretty sure that their pop liked Joseph more than them. They might have been right. I didn't read it that carefully. But it seemed like one morning, you know, the brothers got up early like they did every morning. Went down the road feeding the flocks, whatever they were supposed to be doing, and Joseph must have slept in that day. Because his pop come on down there and said, Joseph, what are you doing hanging around the house, dude? Why aren't you down the road helping your brothers and stuff? Obviously, you know, I'm paraphrasing here. As well as translating. Joseph said, oh, okay. So he gets himself together. He goes down the road to where his brothers are supposed to be. But they're not there. Now, the Bible says that there's a man. He doesn't even have a name, just an anonymous dude standing in a field saying, they went that way. Joseph said, oh, okay. So he gets himself together. He goes down the road. Sure enough, runs into his brothers. Meanwhile, the brothers been plotting against him the whole time. Some say, let's do this to him. Some say, no, let's do that to him. They can't make up their mind. But somehow, Joseph ends up sold into slavery in a caravan going down to Egypt. And he gets down there and he ends up in a jail, in a cell with a couple of big bruisers or something. Nothing changes. Not only that, one of these bad guys in there is having like bad dreams at night. Like it ain't bad enough. But Joseph is good with dreams. So Joseph straightened out the guy. And the guy said, Joseph, if I ever get out of here, buddy, I'll help you out. I'll do something for you. Sure enough, the guy gets out. Forgets about his buddy Joseph. Start rising up in the ranks, getting close to the Pharaoh or something. A few years goes by. One day, the Pharaoh starts having strange dreams. He calls for his pipe and his fiddler's three, whatever. They come on out there, they can't think of nothing. Now everybody in Egypt is nervous. The Pharaoh got the strange look in his eyes, having weird dreams. Nobody knows what's going on. We've been there. All of a sudden, this guy said, wait a minute. I know somebody is good with dreams. He remembers his buddy Joseph. And he goes and he gets him out of the jail, brings him up to the Pharaoh, introduce him. You know, Joe, Pharaoh, Pharaoh, Joe. And the Pharaoh start talking about the dreams and stuff. And Joseph said, oh, that's easy. You're going to have 7 good years. Rain will be falling. Wheat fields waving in the wind. It's going to be very nice. But it's going to be followed by 7 bad years where the rain going to quit. And the wheat fields turns to dust and blows away. It's going to be bad. And the Pharaoh said, whoa. And he looked around. He said, fiddlers, you out of here. You didn't do nothing. Joe, you the man. And he puts Joseph in charge of everything. And Joseph start building some granaries to put some stuff aside during the good time in case the bad time should come, like what he's saying. And sure enough, it comes. It's bad. It's not just bad in Egypt. It's bad everywhere. So back at the farm, Pop and the boys are sitting around saying, it's bad. Pop said, why don't some of you boys go down to Egypt, see what they're done? So he sent a few of the boys down to Egypt to make a long story short. They run into their brother Joseph. He's saying, hey, it's me, Joseph. They're going, uh-oh. He said, don't worry about that. Go home, get Pop, the women, the children, the flocks, and everybody. Bring them on down to Egypt. We'll be living high off the hog. It's not the words he would have used. But sure enough, that's what they did. Went down there living generation after generation, doing pretty good, till one year they got a bad crop of pharaohs. It happens. Although that's farther than I wanted to go. That gets us to Moses, and I wasn't going to go that far. But I've been doing this over 40 years. I know how that man felt. I just hope it doesn't take another 40 years to get somewhere. Of course, that's what happened to them. But out of that, comes some good stuff. David and Goliath. That was good. I liked that when I was a kid. Out of that family come Jesus. Now what? A couple of thousand years after that? I mean, there's a lot of history I've just been through here in a very short amount of time. And there might be a lot of people here tonight that has a lot to say about any one part of it. But I'm here tonight to remind all of you that all of this history, every single piece and part of it, hinges upon, depends upon one unknown anonymous dude standing in a field saying, "They went that way." Put out that guy, there's no Joseph. Put out Joseph, there's no Pharaoh, no Moses, David, Goliath, Jesus. If you ever wondered what one person could do in this world, wonder no more. You don't have to know nothing. You could just be sitting around, somebody say, "Which way did they go?" "They went that way." And the whole freaking world could hinge on you. And you wouldn't even know about it. And I'm sure that man is standing around somewhere saying, "I should have given my name." Too late, Bubba. But there's a verse about it. It goes something like this. The sun comes shining, and I went strolling. The wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling. The fog was lifting, and a voice was chanting. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. Well, I've been singing this song since I was just a little kid. I actually remember when I learned it. I was in the fifth grade when I discovered civil disobedience. It suddenly occurred to me that homework was wrong. Regular people went to work, come home, weren't expected to continue working. Why should that be any different for kids? And so I just stopped doing it. My mother appreciated the principle, but not the application. So she pulled me out of the regular school and put me in a progressive school the very next day so I could progress. I walked into the new school the first day, and all the kids were standing up that morning singing my father's song, "This land is your land." I was the only one there, didn't know the words. Nobody ever told me that stuff was famous outside of our house. When you're a kid, you don't think of that stuff. So I ran home crying at the end of the day, had tears in my eyes, and I told my father what happened, and he made me bring him this little 3/4-size Gibson guitar, which I got for my 5th birthday, and I still have it. And he showed me the chords to the song, and then he showed me the words, and I learned them. And when I had that much under my belt, he taught me some verses that wasn't in the school book version. So when I went back the next day, I went back armed. And I've been singing the song ever since. The last verse he ever sang to me out in the backyard that day is one I'll leave with you right now. For all the people around the world, out in the streets, like I said earlier, taking their lives in their hands out in the Middle East. And other people just, trying to brave the craziness of the world here in this country out there, trying to make a difference. I don't agree with everybody that's ever out there doing anything. That's not the point. I like the idea when people are feeling that they're free to say what's on their mind, get out there and do it. You know what I'm saying? As a matter of fact, I noticed some months back, Hank Jr. got in trouble for saying something somewhere. I was silly, whatever it was, and it wasn't even that bad. And he lost that job on Monday Night Football. And I got pissed off. And I wrote him a little note. I said, "Hank, we probably don't agree on anything. But when people start being afraid that they're going to lose a job or lose some of this or that because of what they've got to say, it's going to start to get dangerous. It's better to say the wrong thing than to feel like you ought not to say anything." So for everybody out there around the world and hearing my voice, and for the folks here tonight, I'll leave you with this last verse I ever heard. It goes something like this. Nobody living can ever stop me as I go walking my freedom highway. Nobody living can make me turn back. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. Thank you very much. I'll tell you what. They're giving me the finger back there. Not that one. The one that says one more. So, back in 1970, I was playing in Chicago one night in a little club. In those days, we weren't playing like one night like these days. We were playing weeks at a time, two or three shows a night. Didn't get out till two or three in the morning. I finished a show one night, walking out with my guitars. A little guy gets in my way, says, Arlo, I want to sing you a song. I said, come on, man. I don't want to hear no songs. I hate songs. I don't even like my songs. Why should I like your songs? And I was tired. I was being a butthead. I wanted to get out of there, you know. He said, Arlo, I just want to sing you one song. This is the song he sang me. He became my good friend. His name was Steve Goodman. Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rail. 15 cars and 15 restless riders, 3 conductors, 25 sacks of mail. All along the southbound Odyssey, the train pulls out at Kankakee, rolls along past houses, farms, and fields. Passing trains that have no names, freight yards full of old black men, and the graveyards of the rusted automobiles. Good morning, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm a native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Dealing card games with the old man in the club car. Penny a point, ain't no one keeping score. Pass the paper bag that holds the bottle. Feel the wheels rumbling beneath the floor. And the sons of Pullman porters and the sons of engineers ride their father's magic carpet made of steel. Mothers with their babes asleep, rocking to the gentle beat, and the rhythm of the rail is all they feel. You know me, I'm a native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Nighttime on the city of New Orleans. Changing cars in Memphis, Tennessee.
halfway home, and we'll be there by morning. Through the Mississippi darkness, rolling down to the sea. But all the towns and people seem to fade into a bad dream, and the steel rail still ain't heard the news. The conductor sings his songs again. Passengers, will please refrain. This train's got the disappearing railroad blues. And good night, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Along with Dave Guthrie, Christy Guthrie, and Terry Oliveri, Arlo Guthrie. His latest recording is on his own label, Rising Sun Records, called In Times Like These.